Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hello, I'm Matt Chorley. This is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, are you ready for President Trump, the sequel? We take a look at what the results from the Iowa caucuses means for the race for the White House. And what does it mean for Britain's transatlantic relationship? We'll also bring you a taster of this week's How to Win an Election podcast too. And don't forget, you can get in touch with me at any time. Just email matt@times.radio with your complaints or questions or grievances or just comments about my face on the new logo. And don't forget, if you like what you hear on the podcast, you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits on Times Radio. Listen for free on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10 on Times Radio. Now, the problem with sequels is they're never quite as good as the original. Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles, Home Sweet Home Alone, genuinely one of the worst films I've ever seen, Dumb and Dumberer. Speaking of which...
And I really think this is time now for everybody... our country to come together. We want to come together.
Yeah, come together. He's back. And this time he means business. We'll look at what President Trump the sequel looks like a bit later. But he's not the only one in the mood for a return to the good old days. Boris Johnson has got his eye on the door of number 10 again. Apparently, he's put in a bid for the Downing Street door that they've used on The Crown, according to The Sun. There's an auction going on right now for props. Clearly, Boris Johnson hoping to recreate past glories, giving victory speeches, shaking the hands of the great and the good, and banging on the door late at night when Carrie's locked him out. But talking of bad sequels, Rwanda is back. Hurrah, says a grateful nation. What do we want? More amendments. Said nobody. At Rwanda, the Rwanda bill, very much the police academy mission to Moscow of commons rebellions, I would say. Although Lee Anderson, the deputy chairman of the Tory party, who is threatening to oppose the government and back some of the amendments, despite being part of the Tory leadership, he insists that's totally normal.
Well, it's not. This is not a rebellion, Patrick. This is about making sure that the bill is beefed up a little bit.
So there you have it, the deputy chairman of the Conservative Party threatening to vote against the government that he's supposed to be the spokesman of is not a rebellion. And now, as we always do on a Tuesday, a little taster of this week's edition of the How to Win an Election podcast with Peter Madison, Daniel Finkelstein and Polly McKenzie. Today, we were taking a look at how to win a by-election. Polly, they're a big... the Lib Dems love them, don't they?
Well, what's great about... by-elections is they're massively different sort of contests than a general election. Because the one obvious thing is that the future of the country is not at stake, which means you get a number of things. One, you tend to get much lower turnout. You also can get much bigger swings. And you can shift the political kind of mood in a place because it's so concentrated and people can safely sort of send a message to the government. Mm. And so whether it is about a local thing, you know, which might be some, there's a field that somebody wants to build some houses on, which you can sort of turn into a big issue, or whether it's the Iraq war or a particular terrorism vote or getting police on our streets, you can just turn it into a sort of single issue referendum on whether the government's any good.
My view of
like
is,
all his strategies.
Look, well, actual elections are, and like local elections actually, are important because they are about how people locally are governed or represented. So they're very important in themselves. But as indicators of national opinion, while they give you a taste of it, they're nowhere near as good as an opinion poll. I mean, you would never conduct an opinion poll by saying we're going to concentrate on one constituency, let everyone do an unfeasibly large amount of voter contact, pose them a completely different question, which is who do you want your MP to be your MP, rather than simply the question of who do you want to be Prime Minister, which is a different question. Organise it at a completely different time to everything else, you'd get a terrible result, which is what you do. So I don't think we take them incredibly seriously and we think they're important. They're important in themselves. They're national elections that are worthy of covering because a Member of Parliament is important. But as indicators of national opinion, except in the crudest way, you know, but if the crude way these by-elections, are, the crude piece of information these by-elections I can exclusively reveal are going to, and on our podcast is going to tell us, is the Tories aren't doing very well, which we already know.
Yeah, they may not be scientific, Danny, but they do create momentum. And they do have...
Give me some examples. They do except have... Darlington. Darlington, where Ossie O'Brien beat Tony Cook just near to the election, which may have stopped the SDP going past Labour in 1983. Just because it had come after, I think, the... one other... maybe Greenwich.
No. Bermondsey was before it, which was a big nail in Michael Foot's coffin. And Greenwich... was in February 1987.
Yeah, later.
Where so that really stymied so there was Labour's momentum.
But give me an example.
Going into the general election in that year.
These don't affect the big results because very few things really do. And I just think the impact of some by-election...
I'm not saying that the Labour would have won the general election of 1987 had it not been for Greenwich that February. But I tell you what it did. We were unfortunately faced with a selection of a, quotes, hard left, quotes, loony left candidate, Deirdre Wood, who was a great sort of Livingstone person. And Kinnock's whole appeal that he had been created was that he had defeated the hard left, defeated militant, he'd turn around the Labour Party, and there was pops up, Deirdre Wood. And I remember what Neil said to me. He said, I'm afraid it's Deirdre, Pete, do what you can.
And if you want to hear the full episode of How to Win an Election, just search for How to Win an Election wherever you're listening to this. Up next, are you ready for President Trump, the sequel?
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The Big Thing.
Donald Trump has completed his first step on the road back to the White House, and it could barely have been more convincing. The former president won the Iowa caucuses with 51% of the vote, more than 30 points ahead of Ron DeSantis in second place, obliterating the previous record for the largest margin of error in the largest margin of victory in the caucus when Bob Dole won by 12.8 percentage points back in 1988. In his victory speech, Donald Trump called on the country to come together.
And I really think this is time now for everybody, our country, to come together. We want to come together. Whether it's Republican or Democrat or liberal or conservative, it would be so nice if we could come together and straighten out the world and straighten out the problems and straighten out all of the death and destruction that we're witnessing. That's practically never been like this. It's just so important. And I want to make that a very big part of our message. We're going to come together. It's going to happen soon, too. It's going to happen soon.
Well, Joe Biden wrote on X that Trump is now the clear front runner in a sign that he's gearing up for a rematch of 2020's election. We are getting in the mood for sequels. Well, Donald Trump called Biden corrupt and accused him of electoral interference.
So I don't want to be overly rough on the president, but I have to say that he is the worst president that we've had in the history of our country. He's destroying our country.
So today we want to take a look at what this outcome in Iowa means for the race to the White House, but also how Britain might respond. Let's go live to Iowa now. James Johnson is our weatherman there. James, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. No video this time, Matt, I'm afraid, as it's 5 a.m. and I'm afraid I've not braved the outside for you this time.
Well, we appreciate you getting up this early. Take us through then what happened overnight. You know, we've had, what, two impeachments, the attack on the US Capitol, 91 criminal charges for trying to overturn the 2020 election, retaining classified documents after leaving the White House, falsifying records connected to hush money payments to a porn star. And yet, Donald Trump is more popular than ever with Republican voters. Explain that for us.
Absolutely. And the reason is that those things that you've just listed have just kept emboldening his support. And the reason why is that people think that people are pursuing Donald Trump. They're trying to get him out of politics. As one person said to me in Georgia a couple of months ago, a swing voter said to me, Donald Trump is trying to why are they so desperate to get rid of Donald Trump? Why are they so scared of him? And I've heard that again and again, that sentiment. And they think that the Democrats are scared of him, and they think they're scared of him because he's strong. And they like that because they want this strong Donald Trump to shake things up and to right the country from its current course. So, you know, those things have only emboldened Donald Trump rather than hurt him. And that's one of the reasons he managed to deliver such a good result here tonight.
So well ahead of his rivals. Let's take a look at some of those to see where they now stand. Is there any path for them to beat him to the nomination? Ron DeSantis came in second place and took the opportunity to have a dig at his doubters in the media.
They were just so excited about the fact that they were predicting that we wouldn't be able to get our ticket punched here out of Iowa. But I can tell you, because of your support, in spite of all of that they threw at us, everyone against us, we've got our ticket punched out of Iowa.
He's got his ticket punched. I mean, he's quite a long way behind James. Then we've got Nikki Haley, who he managed to beat into third place. She continues to present herself as the most electable of all the Republican candidates.
Trump and Biden both lack a vision for our country's future because both are consumed by the past, by investigations, by vendettas, by grievances. America deserves better.
So to be clear, she got 19.1% in Iowa, Ron DeSantis 21.2%, and Donald Trump with 51%. We should, I suppose, let's just, because for the last time probably, mention the biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy made a big splash in some of the TV debates. He's now pulled out of the race, endorsing Trump.
As I've said since the beginning, there are two America First candidates in this race. And earlier tonight, I called Donald Trump to tell him that I congratulated him on his victory, and now going forward, he will have my full endorsement for the presidency. And I think we're going to do the right thing for this country.
So, James, who's got the best chance now, do you think? I mean, does any, you know, the race rolls on to other states. What impact does Ramaswamy dropping out have? And is there anyone who could, you know, bring together the supporters of Haley, the supporters of DeSantis, the supporters of Ramaswamy to sort of combine them into something able to beat Trump?
Well, listening to those Haley and DeSantis clips there, it feels slightly like they were the versions of their speeches that they'd have delivered if they'd have come within 10 points or so of Donald Trump. Of course, they were both 30 points behind him. This is about as good a result as Donald Trump could have hoped for, because it's not clear who can now take on Donald Trump. And the longer that Haley and DeSantis are both in the race, the more that allows Trump to keep cleaning up delegates. As we get further into the contest, more of these contests become winner-takes-all. And what that means is that the delegates who get sent to the convention in the summer to pick the nominee, at the moment, they're allocated proportionally. So, you know, Trump would have got a majority of, 50% or so of the delegates last night. DeSantis would have got a fifth. Haley would have got a fifth. But when we get a bit further in, anyone who wins the primary gets all of the delegates. So, you know, Trump will be able to mop up a lot more the more that the field is split. One caveat, though, is Nikki Haley. The timing of the primary schedule means that literally only a week today, next Tuesday, we'll be in New Hampshire for the next contest. And that is the race in which Nikki Haley has the best chance. And the reason is that independents vote in large numbers in New Hampshire. New Hampshire's electorate could potentially be almost as much as half made up of independents next Tuesday.
And just explain what that means, so James. That's people who aren't fully signed up members of the Republican Party, but they are able to take part in this process of voting for the candidate.
Exactly. So they can turn up on the day they can choose a Republican ballot without needing to change their party registration or anything like that. So it's a lower bar than it was in Iowa. That helps Nikki Haley because a lot of her support is made up of independents. So, you know, you really could see, despite the great result for Trump tonight, you could see Nikki Haley springing an upset next week. The thing is, though, Matt, is that the rest of the primary season looks more like Iowa than it does New Hampshire. Mm. So I'm not sure that even if she does manage to spring the surprise next week, it's going to last for that long.
So finally, James, we've talked a lot about this before when we were doing the monthly focus groups and you gave advice to Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak. If you've got Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis in a room, what advice would you give them on the which one of them should pull out, what position they should take? Is there any route to beating Donald Trump?
My strong view throughout has been that Ron DeSantis is the best person to take on Donald Trump. And the reason is that DeSantis can speak to some of the Trump supporters as well as those who don't much like him, whereas Haley appeals to really only the anti-Trump part of the Republican Party. If we get to a 1v1 race, Trump versus DeSantis, by Super Tuesday, which is the day where 16 states vote, so by far the biggest delegate haul available in early March, then there could be something interesting on the way. But I can't see that happening. So what would I say to them? I think I'd say, you know, look, guys, Trump's not going to offer you a job. One of you needs to drop out, and it's probably Nikki Haley who needs to go.
James, thanks very much for that. Thanks very much for that. I'll let you get back to sleep. So James Johnson from JL Partners joining us live from Iowa. He'll be back taking a look at British politics next month with our monthly Times Radio focus group. While we were just talking, someone's been in touch, Nick, to flag a graphic saying if you're tempted to draw sweeping conclusions to what happens in Iowa, pointing out that in 2016, Iowa was won by Ted Cruz. In 2012, it was won by Rick Santorum, and in 2008 by Mick Huckabee. Those three men all having something in common. They didn't go on to become president. Well, Donald Trump clearly the clear favourite now to challenge Joe Biden for the presidency on the 5th of November. So let's take a look now at what that means for the UK and the so-called special relationship. We asked our friends at YouGov to ask British voters what they thought about the prospect. 56% of people prefer the idea of Joe Biden being elected. Just 18% favouring Donald Trump. Conservative 2019 voters, leavers and men much more enthusiastic about Donald Trump, with more than a quarter of them backing the Republican. Interestingly, and it's only a poll in margin of error and all of that, but younger people marginally more enthusiastic about Donald Trump than older people. But let's dig into then what Britain might do in responding to President Trump back in the White House. I'm joined now by Kim Dowick, Lord Dowick, who was the British ambassador to the US from 2016 to 2019, resigned after his private criticisms of the Trump administration were leaked. Morning, Kim.
Morning.
Good to have you with us. We've also got Sir Liam Fox, Conservative MP, former cabinet minister and great Atlanticist. Hi, Liam.
Good morning.
And in the studio with me, Sarah Elliott, senior advisor for the US-UK Special Relationship Unit at the Legato Institute. Sarah, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Liam Fox, let's start with you. Your assessment of the state of the relationship between Britain and the US and what Donald Trump back in the White House might mean, given that the world is looking even more uncertain, unsafe than it did when he left the White House, and his positions on things like potentially leaving NATO, withdrawing from the global stage, could make that even more unstable.
Well, we're in an unusual position because we have experience of a Trump White House, and we now have experience of a Biden White House. So it's an unusual position for the UK that whatever happens, we've already got experience of this, of either presidency. I don't think that in terms of the core relationship, it makes much difference. Our core relationship is built on intelligence sharing and security. That's always been the basis of the so-called special relationship, and that will remain so. We all quite often get candidates coming into the White House skeptical about that relationship. It goes right back to George Bush and others. If you remember, after Ronald Reagan talked about Germany being the natural partner of the United States in Europe, that usually is until we get to a military confrontation when the United States find that Britain is the most reliable partner it has. That will have been reinforced with the events in the last few days in the Red Sea, where, again, the United Kingdom's not only got the military capability, but the willingness to use it in support of international law and of the American-led operation. So there'll be lessons learned from that. When it comes to Iran, we know that Donald Trump took a very tough line on Iran. And as we look at the situation in the region now, whether it's whether it's Hamas funded and armed by Iran, or Hezbollah funded and armed by Iran, or the Houthis funded and armed by Iran, a tough line will need to be taken, and Trump would do that. Again, when you mentioned about NATO, now I at the time when Ronald we had the first Trump administration, he was quite skeptical about NATO, and many of us thought that was more tactical than anything else. He gave a good rattling to our NATO partners, who in turn actually increased their defense spending in order to maintain the United States underwriting of the NATO project. So I think that some of these threats about Donald Trump not being keen on NATO, I would take with a pinch of salt. And of course, he may not be the favorite to be the Republican candidate. That doesn't necessarily mean he'll win the election.
Kim Dowick, when you go through the Donald Trump's hardline approach on China and on Iran, as Liam was saying there, sometimes on international affairs, he's sort of been ahead of the curve a bit, hasn't he? If you take away the politics and the language he uses and his eccentric approach to statecraft, actually, in terms of where he's been ahead of the curve sometimes, hasn't he?
Well, I think that's a bit of a stretch, to be honest. I agree with everything that Liam says about the basis of the relationship being defense, security, intelligence. And that's going to continue to be strong, whoever is in the White House. And I recall that Trump had a poor relationship with Theresa May, but he still came to the UK to join in the US bombing operation against Syria, against Assad's forces, I think 2018. So Liam's absolutely right. The Americans will still come to us first, and we are the most reliable ally there. But on Trump being ahead of the curve in international issues, well, I mean, just 3 points which would worry me about a Trump return to the White House. One, if you think we should act internationally on climate change, he will take America out of the Paris Climate Change Agreement. I mean, he said that publicly. He did when he was in his first term. He'll do it again. Second, he says that he wants to stop American arms supplies to Ukraine. Now, he says that in the context of, I can solve this thing in 24 hours. I can make them do a deal. Mm. You take that with a pinch of salt. You think that basically his idea is to say to Zelensky, no more arms supplies, go and do a deal with Putin, give up some territory if that's what it takes. I think that's quite a bad outcome for NATO and for the UK, and would look like a failure. And then third point, very quickly, he said publicly he wants to impose a 10% tariff on all imports into America, not just imports from China, imports from everywhere. And he put tariffs on UK exports, some UK exports to America during his first term. I think he means this. He says it's the way he's going to solve America's trade deficit. And that's going to be profoundly disruptive to international trade and will lead to retaliation, at least from the EU and others, and a global trade war. So all of these things seem to me worryingly disruptive. So Liam's absolutely right. The basics of the relationship will be as strong as ever, but there will be some problems if Donald Trump gets back in the White House.
I'll come to you in a moment, Sal. I just want to ask Liam, because I think Liam's got to go. Liam Fox, we've been talking already this morning about the impact of having these two elections going on at the same time. Does having the UK election at the same time as the American election risk the Tory campaign being Trumpified, that those around him will, around Rishi Sunak, will think that there's some advantage to dialing things up to Rishi Sunak being more like Donald Trump? Would that worry you?
No, I don't think it's a risk at all. I think only people in the media bubble in London think that this is an issue. Out there in the country, voters really won't give a monkey's about the American election.
But what about if Nigel Farage is talking up reform in the UK while campaigning with Donald Trump in the US? That's not a media bubble creation.
Well, but I don't think that's a big issue. I think that the issue in the British election will be, do you want to continue with a Conservative government that's making progress on our economy and has got us over the terrible bumps of the pandemic and the inflation of Ukraine, or do you want to take a punt on a party with no plan and no experience? Okay. That will be the real choice in Britain. I don't think that Trump will be. But if I can just say what Kim's saying about trade, we didn't like the steel tariffs applied by the Trump administration, although we did warn, and I remember having conversations with my opposite number, that putting a 25% steel tariff on would simply raise American domestic prices by 25%, which is exactly what happened. And the trade deficit didn't actually reduce in the first Trump administration. It went up. It was different by the end. It was much smaller with China, but it was more with elsewhere. You can't actually defy the laws of economics. And if we thought that we didn't like that experience, the experience of the Biden administration with IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, which was Orwellian in its title, was an even more protectionist, even more distortion-orientated bill, which has actually brought about a misallocation of global capital and badly affected developing countries. So you've got this trend towards protectionism and isolationism in the United States on both sides of the aisle.
Liam Fox, thanks so much for that. Appreciate you joining us today. So I want to ask you about the special relationship, which is precisely the thing you're talking about, and the prospect. I mean, clearly there is a real prospect, if you look at the polls, of Keir Starmer in Downing Street by the end of the year, and then soon after Donald Trump back in the White House. Speaking to the BBC Political Thinking podcast, Keir Starmer was talking about Donald Trump. It didn't sound overly enthusiastic about the prospect of working with Donald Trump. Should they both be elected? Let's take a listen.
We have to make it work. I think that is where any incoming Labour government would want to be. The challenges in the world are too great. This relationship between the UK and the US has been such a strong relationship for so many years, and an important special relationship, that we have to make it work. And that's my mindset.
So making it work doesn't sound like there's a huge amount of common ground there. So what are you looking at in terms of that special relationship? And, you know, Donald Trump and Keir Starmer couldn't be further apart on lots of things.
Right. Well, thanks for having me on. And the US-UK Special Relationship Unit is putting the heart of the Anglo-American relationship at the Legatum Institute, and we're looking to strengthen the relationship through economic and national defense policy. He Keir Starmer's right. You have to deal with your allies despite, you know, who is president or prime minister, and I think that will continue. However, I think Labour, who has had a very huge distaste for President Trump, is going to have to be more diplomatic. They're going to have to rise above the messaging and the phrase and the personal differences and look at what the UK and America have in common and focus on that. That may be difficult for their supporters who came out in droves when President Trump came here on two occasions. So, I hope that they can do so. Americans, we get a bit miffed if we see our best ally being so disrespectful to our head of state.
And so where do you think is the common ground? Where are the things, or the common, people? Are there other people in Team Trump that David Lammy or Rachel Reeves could be because we've heard a lot of, they've been taught, the Labour Party have briefed endlessly about, we're really getting in with Biden's lot, we've been speaking to the White House. And you think, well, actually, literally by the time you get into office, they could be packing up and leaving. So are there policies or personalities that they could find common ground on?
Definitely. Trump's economic advisor, Lighthizer, is very much similar in line with Labour. He loves tariffs. He wants the 10% tariff. So you may actually find a Labour and a more protectionist Trump administration quite buddy-buddy on it's this stuff, which personally, and the Legatum Institute does not think benefits all people.
Yeah, and that's where Donald Trump, being of the Republican Party, but quite left-wing and protectionist economically is interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that is a fight within the Republican Party that Trump brought in 2016 that did not exist before. You know, it's a very interesting coalition. It's actually flipped. I mean, the party of big business are the Democrats now. The party of the union working man are the Republicans now. So, then you have the free trade aspect, and you have people who, want to drop consumer prices, increase, trading relations and goods and services across, borders. And that's also within the Republican Party as well.
The policy is there are policy lines. So, Kim Darroch, in your experience as a diplomat, what would you be saying to an incoming Keir Starmer as Prime Minister about, or maybe even now, maybe this is a process which needs to start now in terms of reaching out and trying to, as well as being diplomatic in public, what should he be doing behind the scenes?
Yeah, this is difficult because of the nature of the team around Trump, I think. But first of all, Keir Starmer is absolutely right, as in that clip that you played, that he has to find a way of making it work. And that will mean holding your tongue on certain things and accepting things that you don't like without making too much of a fuss about it, because Trump is not the man who reacts well to criticism. But yes, you have to try to make it work. And I think you work from the bedrock of defense and intelligence security relationship and try and build from that. So, whatever we do together with America in that field is a sort of starting point. In terms of what you should be doing now, look, you have to be trying to build informal, private contacts with the team around Trump. But it's different from the team that were around him in the 2016 election, which was much more mainstream Republican. If you believe what I read about the team he's now assembled, it's very Trumpy. I mean, it's people who are true believers.
And Kim, Sarah's shaking her head. Go on, Sarah.
I would kind of disagree on the campaign front. He actually has some very professional, sophisticated campaigners this go around that he did not have before, which is part of the reason why he's doing so well. He's taking advantage of that. What you will find is that if he gets to the White House, he will no longer have the Jim Mattises of the world, the establishment around him.
The grown-ups, people
yes.
might say. Yeah,
but
yeah,
he
yeah.
will still have people like Larry Kudlow, Bob Lighthizer, Mike Pompeo, who was Secretary of State and Director of CIA under Trump, come back. These are serious people.
Okay. Sorry, Kip, go on.
I was going to say, you build private links with the people who maybe, as I've just been told, will be very accessible. You have to be very careful how you do it, because if news of that gets out, it looks like you're picking winners before the election has been held. So you have to keep them private and discreet. And, you know, it's going to be more difficult than perhaps people imagine once he gets into office, because there will be things said and done that we profoundly disagree with, for example, on climate change. Mm. But build where you can, disagree as politely as possible where you can. Try and discourage them from being protectionist on trade. Try and build up that wing of the support, that wing of the Republican Party that are still free traders. But it's going to be interesting and challenging time.
Just finally then, actually it's probably a question to both of you. How much of a problem is Nigel Farage in that, in normal times, you wouldn't have a prominent British politician with the ear of the US president basically slagging off both Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer, that whoever is there is going, Donald Trump is going to have his world, his view of Britain shaped by someone who doesn't like either of them. And I just, do you think that's a problem, Sarah? For the special relationship? I mean, whether or not you agree with, you know, what it is that Nigel Farage is saying.
I think Trump has really shown to be his own person, and he's kind of impulsive and reflexive that way. So I'm not sure. Again, I think on economic policy, they may have a lot in common.
Yeah, it's really interesting point. What do you think, Kim? Is Nigel Farage a menace?
I think he can be, but I think he will continue to have access to Donald Trump. But I rather agree we shouldn't overstate his influence on this. I mean, I remember Trump saying in his first meeting with Theresa May, look, Nigel Farage is a friend of mine, but I focus on the people in power.
And that was when, you were in the room when she first went. Mm. That's really interesting. That Kim, always good to speak to you. Kim Darroch, Lord Darroch, former British ambassador to the US, and Sarah Elliott from the Legatum Institute's US-UK Special Relationship Unit. And obviously plenty more on the race for the White House in the coming months here on Politics Without the Boring Bits. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. But for now, for me, Matt Cholley, it's goodbye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.